Are you tired of that one person that always stirs up drama on D&D nights? Click on the link in the show notes to learn about a workshop experience that might be for you.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
So let's layer up our base model. Let's upgrade our base model to some of our sub-races. And there's two, actually, kind of three sub-races as written. And so let's just kind of go through the first two, which are the most common ones, starting with Forest Gnome.
Right. So now we have Gnome FE model, the Forest model, to go with our... extended car analogy, and I don't get cars at all. So forest gnomes.
See how far we can carry this?
Yeah, exactly. So forest gnomes are the ones who are a bit more shy, right? All the normal stuff still applies, but they're the ones who are going to be more hidden because they're very small and live in the wilderness as opposed to cities and industry and clockwork making and all that kinds of stuff. And so they're going to be living in harmony with nature, living, you know, under the roots of trees and caves they've built there or dens they've built there. And they really rely on their kind of being like nimble and quick and hidden and some innate magic to keep themselves kind of safe. And so for them, they get an additional ability score increase to their dexterity, which is nice. So +2 to their intelligence and a +1 to their dexterity. And then they also have some natural magic. They are they have natural illusionist, which means they just at the very beginning, they know the minor illusion cantrip. And if and the intelligence is the spellcasting ability for that. And then they also, which is really fun, they get speak with small beasts, which is kind of fun. And what it is that basically through like hand signs and little sounds, they can communicate simple ideas with small or smaller beasts. Forest gnomes love animals and often keep squirrels, badgers, rabbits, moles, woodpeckers, and other creatures as beloved pets.
Squeak, squeaker, squeak, squeakum.
Yes, thank you. You owe me. You've stolen my acorn. Squeak, squeaker, squeaker. You owe him an acorn. Yeah, exactly. That's totally it. Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
How could I not? I mean, I was just thinking, like, the role-playing for that. As a DM, I would totally be like, okay, show me.
Yeah. Oh, you speak like, with small beasts? Show me then.
Speak small beasts and show me these, like, hand gestures and the noises that you're making to this chipmunk trying to ask it which way the talking llama went.
Which way the talking llama go? Yeah, exactly. I also love the idea that badgers count. And I'm like, a badger's strong enough to carry a mounted rider into combat or to flee, right? I just love an idea of a forest gnome riding the back of a badger and just like, escaping through the trees. I think that's brilliant.
So my first thought with forest gnome is that they'd be a really good companion to a druid. But then I was wondering, actually, maybe they wouldn't because you'd be kind of nullifying some of the magical spells that you might get organically from the druid race. And so I'm wondering if the forest gnome, as much as it seems like a really clear crossover with something like a druid, would actually be better served aligning with a different class because
it's true. Yeah.
Have like doubled up on spells that you can actually use twice.
Right. But that's the thing is that even though a druid has access to spells like speak with animals, being able to speak to them naturally on, you know, just anytime you feel like it is great because you're
stacking
things.
That's true. You're not using a spell.
And yeah, you're right. There's a little overlap, but it doesn't have to be all about efficiencies. That flavor is really great too, but they could just be, you know, a ranger or a rogue or something else.
They could be a Disney princess and be a bard and then sing to all of their animal friends.
How do you do that? That's amazing. That's perfect. I absolutely love it. Wow. That's
the way that my brain works. I can't help it.
That's
so, yeah.
So good. Oh, it could be like brave and they could be a druid anyway and they can just turn into a bear as well.
There you go.
See, now there's so many options. This is great. Forest gnomes are the best. And then do you want to do rock gnome as well?
Yeah, let's dive into. So, which one of these would you say is the most common type of gnome to see? I know that forest gnomes are common, even though they might be rare, which sounds a little counterintuitive. There's lots of them out there. You're just not likely to see many of them, which I think is the concept there.
Exactly. They like their privacy a bit more than most. Rock gnomes are definitely the more common. Because they really lean into the tinkering and invention elements that kind of loom large in the description for gnomes in general. And so they're the most common ones you're going to see in a variety of settings. And by the way, when I just said rock gnome, I was like, wait, okay, so a gnome that has like Kiss makeup and a steampunk guitar because they're a rock gnome. Sorry, we're getting too many great ideas out of this episode, I think.
We really are. So, if anybody makes one of these characters based off of the ideas, please, please, please let us know.
Yes, please.
I would love to see that character sheet.
Absolutely.
Okay, so yeah, rock gnomes are probably going to be the most common. You'll see them the most frequently, especially these are the ones that are going to like populate the cities, like you said. Yeah. They're not going to be hidden away in the forest. These are who you're going to see hanging out with the halflings and the elves in the big cities.
Right, exactly. And these are the ones that are going to be really great for that like generations long tutor for a noble human family or something. So they get an ability score increase of 1 to their constitution. So they're a bit hardier. Mostly to survive the failed experiments that they work on.
I like that.
That's how I think of it. Then they have Artificer's Lore. So whenever you make an intelligence history check related to a magic item, alchemical objects, or technological devices, you can double your proficiency bonus. You can add your proficiency bonus twice, basically, instead of any bonus you would apply normally. So
can you parse that apart? There's a lot of big words in that.
Yeah,
can you give us
sure.
like an example of when that would apply in like a role play or something so that it's a little bit easier to digest so we don't have to think quite as hard to understand
right.
what that's saying we
right.
can do?
So let's say you've got a rock gnome wizard and they come across a door that's mechanically held through a series of gears and levers and things, and they're like, which lever do we pull? They would get to go up and they would make an intelligence history check. And if they're proficient in history, let's say they've got a +3 because of their intelligence, and then they have a +2 because of their proficiency, they would add another +2. So now instead of rolling at a 5, they're rolling at a 7 to figure out what the heck this thing is and make sure they don't pull the wrong lever.
Okay, that's helpful. Wrong lever. Why do we even have that lever? How many times have we brought that up in this? Oh my gosh. Like, it's just applicable to everything.
It's so good.
Cool. That helps, like, sort that a little bit better into, like, real life playing terms.
Yes, exactly. And then they have the tinker ability, which basically means that when they have a tinker's tools, which is one of the tool sets you can get, with your background, when you use it, you can spend an hour of work and about 10 gold pieces worth of materials and make a tiny clockwork device. And they give a couple of listings of what they can do. Now, the device only works for about 24 hours unless you kind of keep it going, basically winding it back up, greasing the gears, all that kind of stuff, infusing some magic into it, perhaps. Or you can use your action to dismantle it and kind of harvest the parts and use those parts to make something else later. And you can only have 3 of those devices going at one time. There's 3 options. There's a clockwork toy. So this is like a little like clockwork animal. Think Energizer Bunny, you know, ting, 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 ting. You place it on the ground. It can move 5 feet around. And goes in random directions and makes a noise appropriate. So that's just like a child's toy or something really great to grab the attention of the monster in the dungeon while the rest of the party sneaks around to flank it or to bypass the thing it was guarding, which is kind of a fun
like application. Like a surprise attack, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's looking at this little thing and it's like, what the heck is this? And then everyone's like, surprise! And then there's a fire starter. It's a little device that produces flame. So basically, they can make a Zippo. They got to make it lighter. Which, if they are a wizard already, they can just produce flame or a druid or it's prestidigitation does this. It's a cool idea. I don't know how mechanically strong it is, but I like it. And then a music box, when opened, it plays a single song at moderate volume, and then it'll stop. Or if you close the lid, it stops doing the music.
So these are really niche. And like offhand, the only thing I can think of that these would be applicable for is, like we said, in combat as some sort of distraction, or potentially as like a gift to somebody to try to like pass a persuasion or like a charisma, especially the toy, be like, oh, look, I made this. I will give it to you if you let us into this building or something like that. But it's going to stop working in 24 hours. And so maybe that could come back to bite you.
Do you want to know my like devious version of this?
I would love to know your devious version of this.
Okay, so my devious version of this requires our gnome, rock gnome, to be a wizard. And so you're in a dungeon, and they open the box, and it starts playing music. The monster or monsters hopefully gather around, and the song basically is a song that says, you're a bunch of fools because today I prepared explosive runes. And they look inside the box, and then there's the magic runes that explode when read, and the whole thing explodes. So that's what I would do. So there's always an advantage of grouping monsters in a very specific, predictable place for your nefarious means.
Yeah.
So
I think this would be also be like really good for players who think very strategically or creatively with how can I use this object in a unique or interesting way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they're meant to be used as presented necessarily. They're meant to be like, okay, here's this strange little thing. Figure out something cool to do with it.
Right. Think about Thieves' Cant. Think about like maybe there's a very specific song that means something to members of a Thieves' Guild. Right. And you could just be at the bar and just like open it up and it plays a couple of notes and you close it. And the guy at the end of the bar looks up at you and you look at him and he winks and you're like, all right, got it. You know, you know now. You're like, the heck did you just do, man? Don't worry about it. I'll tell you later. So like I could see a couple of really interesting ways. And the fact that these things are so limited and so well defined in what they can and can't do, I think in my mind that makes them more interesting to play with.
Right. Now, there's one last subrace of gnomes, probably the most uncommon. I would love if you would grace us with the official name of this, because I can't say that, but you say it so beautifully.
What, deep gnome? That's really easy to say.
Oh, come on.
Okay, so they're called deep gnomes, but also they're called Smurfeblin. are they
Smurfeblin.
Making
Smurfeblin.
Yes. Are they making a joke about Smurfs? They absolutely are. Although in French, the Smurfs are called Les Tromphs. So it's debatable. But anyway, these are gnomes from the Underdark. These guys are going to be very much like the Duergar we talked about with the dwarves. These are the purple, white-haired Underdark versions of that race. And so they are actually usually good aligned, even in the monster manual. They're very, very kind of guarded and secretive. But they're just as intelligent and crafty as their above ground kin. But they are typically good guys, for sure. And they also get ability score increase of dexterity for one. Now this is one of the downsides. There's a couple of downsides, but they don't live as long as other gnomes do. They live about 200 to 250 years, as opposed to 350 to 500. Part of it is because their size is they're 3 to 3.5 feet tall and usually weigh 80 to 120 pounds, as you were pointing out to me before we started recording, Casey. I think the reason that their lives are so much shorter is heart disease.
Right. Stop eating so much bacon.
Yeah, you can't just live on mushrooms, guys. Get a treadmill. Come on. So they're much more stout. I'm a little surprised that they have a +1 to their dexterity. Let's just say magic.
That's always the best answer when there's no good answer.
Yeah, magic. Exactly. A wizard did it. Yay. So that's the age. The size, again, 3 and 3.5, about a little lighter than humans. Size is still small. They have the same speed as normal. They have superior dark vision because they live almost exclusively underground or in the underdark. And so they have dark vision out to 120 feet, which is kind of cool. And because of their kind of like purpley gray skin, they have something called stone camouflage. So they have advantage on dexterity stealth checks to hide in rocky terrain.
So they can just kind of like stand up against their rocks and not blink and hope nobody sees them.
Pretty much, yeah. And then languages, they know common, gnomish, and undercommon, the language of the Underdark. It says here that this from Revelin, dialect is more guttural than surface. I tripped all over that. Surface gnomish, so they sound like Scottish or Germans, perhaps. They don't know, most of them don't know common as well, but they learn enough to deal with outsiders. And to get by in like other lands and stuff. Now, what's interesting is they don't have sunlight sensitivity, which I find very, very interesting, nor do they have natural magic like some of the other ones would, which is what I would kind of think would happen, if especially when you look at the Duergar for the dwarves. And do you still have the Smurfeblin Deep Gnome listing for the Monster Manual up? Because I wonder if there's something lost in player character translation, as it were, when it
comes, because these are also a monster, like you can, right. It's a playable race, but it's actually also in the Monster Manual.
They
have innate spell casting.
They do. Non-detection, blindness, deafness, blur, and disguise self. I thought so. Yeah. Everything else is still there, and they don't have the sunlight sensitivity. Interesting. Okay. So I think that there could be a really great, precedent, if you want to argue with your DM, to maybe get some of these bi-level innate magical stuff. That'd be kind of neat. Maybe give up something else as a trade-off. But that's an interesting distinction between the two. So those are your three sub-races. You've got your deep gnomes, your rock gnomes, and your forest gnomes.
Now, we kind of sprinkled some of this throughout, but I like ending the race episodes with our wine and cheese pairing suggestions. So if you're going to play a gnome, what are some of your, maybe your top three picks for, I mean, you could do anything with them, but your top three picks for classes,
you really can.
That would be just a really nice parallel to what they already offer.
Right. If you're trying to find something that's going to go just really with the grain, as it were, wizards and artificers are obvious choices for that. As we talked about with the forest gnomes, something, as you said, like a bard, which is beautiful, or ranger or druid would be really great for those kinds of things. And then if you want to go against the grain, I think that anything that's going to be knowledge-based, like perhaps a cleric with the knowledge domain or a cleric with nature domain, might be really interesting as well.
Yeah.
And I also like the idea that you put forward about the bard is a great idea, because let's go back to the tinkering ability. What if you have a music box and now you have your own musical accompaniment and you don't have to play any instruments?
Or you could even make yourself like a one-man band. Set up.
Oh, you're allowed to have three of those. One does harmony, one does melody, one does percussion, and then you just go, that's genius. And you can have like one of those suitcases that like has the legs that come out and open the top, and you're just like singing on the street. Yeah, let's just do that. I have to go make another character. Thanks a lot, Casey.
Oh yeah, like you're that upset about it.
Not at all.
Awesome. So there are some awesome suggestions for you guys listening. If you are curious about playing a joyful, happy little gnome, there are some great ideas for you on how you can build that gnome character out. And also some knowledge on how that character is going to look once you start building that character sheet together.
Yeah. And could I just end with this real quick? I got an email from someone named Troy this week that says, I love the podcast, by the way. You guys have really helped me as a DM frame certain concepts for my players. It's been very helpful. I'm looking forward to when you guys eventually tackle puzzles and traps, and I'm trying to give my players a bit of everything, combat, social, puzzles, exploration, but balancing how to make encounters dangerous or high stakes and not killing everyone or putting an impossible wall in front of them is tricky. Kind regards, Troy.
Aw, thank you, Troy. Thanks for listening.
If you guys want to send us a kind email about how you're using the compendium, or even do it in your favorite podcaster of choice, especially iTunes, and leave us a review, it goes a long way to getting the podcast out to more people who desperately need to hear us give this information. Yes, that wasn't a question. That was a statement. So go and do that. Thanks, guys.
We hope you guys enjoyed this episode of The Compendium. If you haven't already done so, it would really help us out if you took a moment to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review. Jason and I really enjoy creating this content, and it definitely helps boost our charisma modifier every time we see a 5-star rating pop up. The Compendium is actually also on Patreon, so if you like listening, that is a great way to help contribute to the content that we create. New episodes are available every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursday if you're a patron on our Patreon account. And you can always keep up with us between episodes by following us on social media. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.